Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Pharmaceutical Commerce Podcast. I'm Nico Saraceno, editor of PC. Joining me today is Andy Udell, North American president at Calliditas Therapeutics, a specialty pharma company. Today, among various items on the agenda, he'll be discussing the complexities surrounding rare disease product commercialization, while also shedding lights on outreach strategies that help spread awareness of new medications. Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on the show today. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Nico. And first of all, congratulations. Great pronunciation of the name of our company, Calliditas. And I appreciate you having me on.
I did have a slight hesitation there, but happy to get it right on the first take. And yeah, let's just dive right into it. So the first question, generally speaking, what challenges would you say come with creating a new market for a new drug? Because that is obviously quite a overwhelming task. So what would you say the main challenges are of that?
As you can imagine, many challenges exist when creating or bringing a drug to an existing market. But imagine creating a new drug for a new market, and this certainly can lead to additional obstacles, most challenging of which, in my opinion, can include the need to establish a new regulatory pathway for approval. This happened to be the case here at Calliditas when developing our lead product, which is for a rare kidney disease called IgA nephropathy. You have to realize in this area, over the past two decades, very few therapies for renal diseases have been developed because these running long clinical trials to measure endpoints, things like time to dialysis or transplantation, is extremely costly and time consuming, and especially when you're looking at slower progressing diseases. So for Calliditas, we used our phase 2b study alongside research and analysis conducted by Kidney Health Initiative and spearheaded by the American Society of Nephrology, the National Kidney Foundation, and the FDA all together, everybody. What happened is it led to the FDA's acceptance of an accelerated approval pathway at our end of phase 2 meeting in January 2017. So this is really the first time this cardiorenal division of the FDA has granted an accelerated approval in a nephrology indication. And this is the same pathway that others who are currently in development of products to treat IgA nephropathy are following. So I guess you could say we pioneered the approval pathway and process in partnership with FDA and other institutions to bring our lead medications called Tarpeyo, which is the first IgA nephropathy treatment to market in 2021.
Wow, very interesting. Setting the precedent, as you mentioned, and we'll definitely dive into IgA nephropathy in a bit. But I want to get into this. So the Orphan Drug Act, as many people know, it defines a rare disease as a disease or condition that affects less than 200,000 people in the United States. So what important lessons have you learned, especially as it pertains to the concepts of market access and patient access around commercializing new products in this rare disease space? Because it's definitely quite involved.
Good question. But I think prior to even considering market and patient access, you need to understand everything surrounding the disease. And this includes items like the disease pathophysiology and the patient journey and the experiences for each stakeholder, meaning physicians, caregivers, payers, and the patients, of course, themselves. And while this may sound basic, you have to remember with a rare disease, this information is often not so easy to access. You know, you can't find or discover a lot of this stuff. So it takes a lot of research, digging, interviews, market research, and really, step number one is you have to become an expert in the disease and most importantly, the patient journey. Then you could focus on market access. So market and access. So when I look at it, I really look at market and patient access. I kind of divide it into three key areas. First would be trade and distribution. The second would be payer coverage. And third is patient services. So we're looking at each of those. For us, you know, trade and distribution sounds like something that would be boilerplate, right? How hard can it be to get the product from a manufacturer to the pharmacy, right? Well, every product is unique, and you need to do the research in order to find the optimal path between manufacturing and getting the product into the hands of the patients. It's obvious that you don't need to stock every retail pharmacy when you're preparing for a rare disease, but differences between expected market sizes, is the treatable population, I mean, think about it, rare disease you said is under 200,000, right? So is the treatable population going to be 100 patients or is it going to be 75,000 patients? One specialty pharmacy may be able to handle 100 or a few hundred or a few thousand, but that may not be the case if you anticipate 75,000 patients, for example. Other items you got to consider are the makeup of the patient types. Are they younger or older patients? The complexity of the product, its route of administration, as well as some other important factors that help determine if you want what we would call is either an exclusive distribution, very, you know, focused one central pharmacy, limited distribution, maybe a few, or expanded upon that. The second thing that I look at for, or category, I'll say, for access is really to consider payer coverage and your strategy there. And the payer interactions may need to start early and often. And really, they begin a lot of times with disease state education. Remember, when you're dealing with a rare disease, this is sometimes, in our case, we're the first company that's ever spoken to these payers about this disease and how to manage it. No one's ever spoken to them about this before, and just having an indication is not good enough for them to say, okay, we'll cover it. Sounds good, whatever you want. You know, you got to provide the evidence of the value you're providing. How different are you than alternatives? Why should they cover you? This often requires health economic analysis and a lot of stuff that's not so easy to drum up when dealing with a rare disease. In our case, you have a population that it can lead to end-stage renal disease, and over 50% of these patients, and end-stage renal disease means dialysis, it means transplantation. And these are really costly items that if you're showing that you can delay or avoid them, obviously there's a big economic benefit there. The last piece of these access to focus really on is the patient services. And this really includes items and services that you're going to provide above and beyond to the patient and the caregiver. This is above and beyond your normal dispensing that you walk into a pharmacy. And so most specialty products provide these extra services really in order to help facilitate and assist the patient and the healthcare professional through the benefits and payer approval process at a minimum. So these can be costly, but depending on the product and therapeutic area, it's really, they may be a necessity. So those are really the areas and the things that are the biggest focus when you're dealing with market access and patient access.
Fascinating. And I've been curious about this. Now, the idea of leading a global team to commercialize like a product in a specific country, how does one go about doing that? Because obviously there's going to be different policies, there's different regulatory aspects of it, and this patient behavior and activity, I'm sure, varies from nation to nation. So how do you go and navigate that challenge of doing it? And say we're doing it here in the US, like how does that thought process begin to?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I guess you have to look at our company and how we do things. So I joined a company with a wonderful leader, our CEO, Renee Lucander. And she, since the day I joined the company, she kind of had a clear vision as to how we were going to commercialize this. We've decided, and we always said, we're going to do it here in the US ourselves. We know we can do it. And then we'll talk about outside the US in a minute. But right away, as any good leader recognizes, both of us talk a lot about getting the right people. We got to get surrounded by great people that have experience and that we can collaborate together and all be focused with the same objective. So we have really assembled an excellent team of functional experts and leaders that work extremely well together. Sometimes at the beginning, this started with even outside consultants or organizations. As we hit different milestones and wanted to grow the company, then we started to bring people on board full time. And a lot of this, look, it doesn't come without challenges. One of which for us is some key people are living in Sweden. We're Swedish, our headquarters is in Sweden, and there's certainly changes and cultural differences and things, but Renee and I always talk and focus, spend a lot of time talking about communication and collaboration. So that's key. So outside the US, we've made a conscious decision as a company that we're going to partner. So similar here, we've developed our own organization that's key and a bunch of experts, But outside the US, we look for the right partners. So we've had a process. We have a partner for China, and we have a partner in Europe now, and we got approval in Europe. And so these are important decisions that we're looking for the people that will mesh with us that we can coordinate and work well with.
I think another important aspect to keep in mind is trust and awareness of new products. It's a difficult thing to come by and when it comes to any industry for this matter. But in your opinion, Andy, I know you started getting into it a bit in terms of reaching out and pointing out the benefits of saving money with payers and things like that. But what outreach strategies do you think should be used to engage hospitals and HEPs and physicians? What is your pitch and your selling point in this to really get them involved?
Well, I think the simple answer to this is to always think about your audience and your customer, which in our instance is typically the patient or the physician or the payer in this instance. So being first and being first to market with a product and rare indication, inherently, it has its challenges. You're often dealing with physicians that may not have had a new tool or discussed this disease pathophysiology or this disease since med school. And for some people, unfortunately, that can be decades ago. In addition, however frustrated they may have been prior to your product being available, they may be managing the disease in a certain way for decades. You need to have a significant behavioral change when a new disease-specific treatment or option hits the market. And think about it, it's who are we to come in and tell them, hey, you've been doing it wrong for so long, or something like that, that doesn't fly. So now throw in some additional challenges and obstacles we faced, just specific to us, is this is an accelerated approval, right? So there's an ongoing regulatory process. We've been approved on a surrogate marker, but we're still involved in the pivotal trial for the confirmatory part. There are guidelines to treat different diseases. They don't get created or updated overnight. This takes time. Even though we're done and we're ready, we want them to change. Let's go. They're not ready. And then, you know, especially a small biotech, you're not launching with dozens of studies and can't be doing head-to-head trials and against off-label products. It's unethical, but they want the answers. You know, a lot of your audience wants the answers to that stuff. And oh, by the way, we prepared and initiated a launch during a pandemic. So some of the key learnings and takeaways that I would say. So you hear this a lot in our industry, and it couldn't be more true when you're dealing with a rare disease, and that is always be focused on the patients. It really comes down to that. And when you feel that and you believe that and you see that and meet these stories, it makes what you do worthwhile. You got to stick to the facts. With clinical results being paramount, we might not have all the answers, but you're trying to give perspective and show how this product did in the clinic. And our product happened to be, fortunately, very consistent. So there's a certain expectation. You can't assume that your audience is up to date on this topic. As I said, they may not have discussed this for so long. So they really might not have thought about these things that you're asking them and challenging them to think about. The other keys are certainly, and the pandemic taught us this, is provide your audience information where they want it, how they want to receive it. And also, like any selling process, in bite-sized chunks, you got to have patience, right? It's a process with there's no magic bullet. And like anything, you're going to get, your audience varies. You have some early adopters and quick learners, and then some are more conservative and take repeat message and interactions before they're going to adopt or adapt to change.
Yeah, things like of this magnitude do take time. You know, Rome obviously was not built in a day, and you have to be patient with such a complex topic. But you've mentioned the importance of the patients. Obviously, everything links back to them, and you have to keep their needs and their wants in mind. So could you describe the process in designing this new patient portal for the IGAN
community? It's called the IGAN Connect.
Yeah, would you mind getting into that? I found it fascinating.
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm glad you asked about this because we've discussed a lot of commercial stuff. And while we're certainly very proud of that, it does boil down and comes back to the patient. And I think for me, it's I guess I'll reflect upon my time here at Calliditas, and two things stand out to me, two stories. The first is when I first joined the company, after making sure I could pronounce our name correctly, which you did such a nice job again, I'll remind you. I hit Google, right? I started exploring what's out there on IgA nephropathy for patients and support. And you go online and you start searching, and very limited information. Some of this is conflicting as it related to the disease itself. But after some digging, I started looking about advocacy, and I came across this little website. It said IgA Nephropathy Foundation of America. And I dialed the number. I went to what I think was literally a answering machine, you know, not like voicemail, and left a message. And someone calls me back. And next thing you know, I'm meeting this individual, this woman, off a highway in New Jersey for breakfast at a deli. And we start talking, and I was just introduced to a mother here and the father who was not there, but the story of this family that really, basically their son gets diagnosed and they drop everything and devote their lives kind of to focusing on a cure and supporting these patients in this disease. And I realized that this was a super grassroots organization and their story was not unusual. So that's the first thing that kind of I think back to. The second thing I think is it's about a year, a little bit more than a year later. So it's summer of 2019 now. They have this crazy thing called an ELPFDD, which stands for an externally led patient-focused drug development meeting. And these are done by the FDA and some sponsors in order to get a true picture of the patient, what happens with these patients, because you have companies that are now developing trials, and we talked about the regulatory path earlier, and they want to be able to see what's relevant, what's important to these patients. So the goal is to help the FDA, to help industry and some of these other associations really understand the disease. So, and at that meeting, it's a lot of patient panels and discussions, and you can't help but be super, super inspired by the stories. And a lot of them had a lot of commonalities and really paint this good picture of what these patients go through. Much of that, besides the disease itself, is this uncertainty, this lack of information that left them depressed or anxious. And that was striking, that kept coming over and over again. And several of these patients even commented, you know, this is the first time I've ever met face-to-face another IgA nephropathy patient. And IgA nephropathy, just so you know, is a generally large orphan disease. So while this may not be unique to rare diseases, we needed to help change this as a company. These are two things that I said, these are terrible things for these people to have to deal with. And IgAN Connect is our contribution to attempt to do so. So while the IgAN Foundation has evolved, they really progressed, and now they have an annual patient in-person meeting. We've developed IgAN Connect, and it's our hope that this platform is going to serve as a tool for these patients to gather information, to better understand the disease, and give them knowledge and resources to handle the emotional and the physical toll the disease can have. Really, we want to empower the community to know that they're not alone and have these people feel more comfortable when they get diagnosed with this disease.
Definitely. And like you're saying, I feel like with any of these rare diseases or in general, these what the patients are actually going through, kind of this behind the scenes or what they're experiencing, it doesn't get covered enough, and it's not shared enough. So having a portal like this to really facilitate and assist in that is definitely going to be quite a help. So I really want to thank you, Andy, for taking the time to discuss IgAN and just the commercialization process when it comes to not only this medication, but the rare disease space in general, which is such a complex space, to just really facilitate this process. So thank you for the time. Looking forward to seeing future updates.
Thank you so much, Nico. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners, be sure to stay in the loop of our latest updates via our website at pharmaceuticalcommerce.com or on our SoundCloud page. Take care, everyone.